Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode number 8.
Got this force coming through in my blood, in my veins, it's a current of love.
This week we have the breaking news of drafty signings and the minor league roundup, followed by The Conversation with Charlie Caskey, staff writer for Jays Journal and founder of the Vancouver Canadiens blog, Your Van Seas.
Raise up your hands, higher, higher, raise up your hands, higher, higher, raise up your hands, higher, higher, raise.
So sit right back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. Breaking news. The Blue Jays have announced that they have signed 16 of their 40 draft picks, although by my reckoning that number is actually 18. As far as I can tell, the Jays' 3rd, 4th, and 5th round picks have signed, bringing high school pitchers Patrick Murphy and Evan Smith, along with junior college lefty Daniel Leitz, into the fold. Another high school righty, Connor Green, has signed, while it's reported that the Jays have signed their 10th round pick, Air Force Academy catcher Garrett Customs, who probably won't play due to military commitments. There has only been bonus information leaked for Murphy and Smith, and the word is that the Jays are paying about $250,000 under slot between the two of them. Also in the top 10, Oregon State lefty Matt Boyd will certainly sign when his team is eliminated from NCAA playoffs, while Mississippi State lefty Chad Giroto will do the same. Into the next 10 picks, the Blue Jays have signed number 12 pick Tim Meza, a lefty from Millersville University in Pennsylvania, Ithaca College shortstop Tib LaCastro, South Carolina first baseman L.B. Dantzler, Central Arkansas outfielder Jonathan Davis, Wisconsin high school catcher Dan Jansen, tagged as a sleeper prospect by some, and Pickering, Ontario high school pitcher Sean Ratcliffe. In rounds 21 through 30, Peterborough, Ontario native Mike Reeves, a catcher from Florida Gulf Coast University, has signed, as have outfielders Brendan Kalfus and Sean Hurley. High school shortstop Andrew Floridas from New York has signed, while lefty pitcher Matt Dermody from Iowa will also sign, and Garrett Pickens, a righty from Delta State University in Mississippi, has also signed with the Blue Jays. In the final group of 10 from rounds 31 to 40, only Southern Arkansas shortstop David Harris and Ohio University righty Brett Barber have signed, in addition to 5 undrafted free agents, Corey Gorman, Cale Wine, Joey Lovecchio, Kobe Kramer, and Phil Kish. Look for more signings over the next week, and we'll have that info for you in the next podcast. And now the minor league roundup. Rather than going through a whole list of players this week, we'll just take a look at one or two and look at what they've done for their team. The Bisons are 3 games back of Pawtucket in the International League North Division with a 34-40 record in AAA. Stepping in as the team's closer for Neil Wagner, John Stilson has put up some interesting numbers since his promotion to Buffalo. He's thrown 10 and a third innings and has given up only 1 run on a solo home run on 4 hits and 6 walks while striking out 9. While this gives him a sub-1.00 whip and an excellent K ratio, the 6 walks in 10 innings are a bit troubling for the moment. I won't bring up Stilson's AA numbers this year because as small a sample size as 10 and a third innings are for his AAA season, his 2 and a third innings in AA is ridiculously small. The 23-year-old made his pro debut last year and had a 4.14 walk per 9 inning ratio and a 10.2 walk percentage over 50 AA innings. Right now, his K percentage in AAA is 23.1, the highest of his pro career, and expected since he's been moved into a relief role, while the 15.4% walk ratio is also the highest. Yes, it's a small sample size, but one we'll need to keep an eye on. The AA Fisher Cats went 4-1 this week and are 8.5 games back in 4th place of 6 teams in the Eastern Division of the Eastern League with a 32-34 record. First baseman Clint Robinson started the season hitting like crazy. The 28-year-old minor league veteran has traditionally had a high average and very high on-base percentage as he has a very good eye and takes a lot of walks. In April, Robinson came out like gangbusters, hitting .318 with a .417 OBP and .477 slugging percentage, and was one of the key cogs in the Fisher Cats offense. Now he has receded to the background, hitting .223, .342, .330 in May with just one home run, and has almost completely disappeared in June, hitting .200, .263, .400. He was removed from the 40-man roster by the Blue Jays and was outrighted to New Hampshire, and with other younger first basemen starting to hit, like Gabe Jacobo in Dunedin and Kevin Patterson in Lansing, and with two better options in Luis Jimenez and Mauro Gomez in Buffalo, the question is how much longer can he hit this poorly before he gets his release? The Dunedin Blue Jays host the All-Star Game in the Florida State League with three games left in the season's first half, and they hold a one-half game lead on Brevard County and a one-game lead on Daytona and Clearwater in the North Division of the FSL with a 34-29 record. Another first baseman, Casey Hobson, is a player that I've had my eye on since he started to put up significant power numbers in Lansing last year. He set a club record there for doubles with 43 in 2012 and more than doubled his home run output from the season before. His 2013 season shows a lot of potential, but also shows some weaknesses. He's only hitting .216 with a .246 OBP, but he leads the team with 9 home runs. Some of the advanced stats tell a slightly different story. An explanatory note here, I'm taking these advanced numbers from FanGraphs, which probably has some incorrect numbers. FanGraphs shows Hobson with 183 plate appearances and 171 at-bats, which is the same as both Baseball Reference and MILB.com, but has him having only 35 hits, one single and one double fewer than both BR and MILB.com. Therefore, I believe that some of the advanced stats will be off too. Either way, I think that some of these stats will normalize as time goes on. His strikeout ratio of 16.9% is not inordinately high and has been higher at points throughout his minor league career, while his walk rate is quite low but similar to what he had in 2010. His power numbers are at the highest point in his career and his BABIP is unsustainably low, under 200. This means that he's probably getting some bad luck and his numbers will probably normalize as the season goes on. I would also expect him to finish with a walk percentage in the 7-8% range, under his numbers from last season, but above what they are now. If Hobson finishes with a .250 average, maybe a .310 on-base percentage, and his power numbers continue where they are now, we might see a new power bat emerging from the Blue Jays' top prospect lists. The Lansing Lugnuts are now tied for fourth place in the Eastern Division of the Midwest League with a 31-35 record after surging from near the bottom. Justin Jackson is a fascinating player to look at. Formerly an infielder, and later an outfielder, who had significant struggles with the bat, the Blue Jays looked at his strong arm and decided to convert him to a pitcher, which he had been part of the time in his senior year of high school. It has been a successful conversion so far, with Jackson only giving up 3 earned runs in 17 1/3 innings pitched in Lansing this season. Jackson has been a strong arm out of the bullpen, hitting 95 on the radar guns, and his infectious, upbeat personality has probably had a very positive effect on how the bullpen in Lansing has become a very strong unit. Batters are hitting only 191 against him, showing that Midwest League hitters are struggling to get a handle on him. While his walk rate is a little bit high at 10.4%, his strikeout rate is okay at 18.2%, although I have a feeling that both will improve as he develops better command and a better feel for his off-speed pitches. Coming up next, The Conversation with blogger Charlie Caskey, staff writer for Jay's Journal and founder of YourVanSees.com. Welcome back to the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'm here with Charlie Caskey, writer for Your Van Sees. That's YourVanSees.com for the blog for the Vancouver Canadiens. He also writes for Jay's Journal, one of my colleagues on staff at Jay's Journal. Welcome to the podcast, Charlie.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's start talking, first of all, because the Vancouver Canadian season is about to get underway, and they've had some great activities and great press days and things going on there at Nat Bailey Stadium in Vancouver. But before we get to that, let's talk about some of the players that you've seen in the recent past who have moved on in the organization and are now at other places. One of those players that you've commented in one of your recent blogs over on Jay's Journal is Dwight Smith Jr., who has been tearing it up a little bit in the Midwest League.
Yeah, he's been a real surprise for me, and I mentioned that in my article that I published this morning, because he came up last year in Vancouver, and he just looked overmatched. I mean, he couldn't hit for power. He couldn't get himself on base. I mean, in the field, the Nat is a huge outfield, so it's tough to really get a good feel for outfielders. I mean, he didn't seem to make that many bad reads, and he's got decent speed, but at the plate, and you know, he's a young guy. He was a 2011 draft pick, so for me, I just assumed, and I'm guessing the organization assumed, that he needed another short season assignment this year. I had him penciled into the Vancouver's outfield this year, along with DJ Davis. So I'm a bit surprised on two fronts. A, that put it to Lansing. I guess I can't remember the injury cover he went up to do at the end of April. And you know, the fact that he's done really well since he's been up there. So good on him. He's gone from being a potential bust to back in the prospect mix.
Absolutely. And he's up there with Dalton Pompey, who you saw a little bit last year as well, despite the fact that he had a really injury-riddled season.
Yeah, that was unlucky, because at the beginning of the season in Vancouver, we really weren't blessed with a lot of genuine prospects, similar to this season, actually, looking at the roster for this year. But Dalton Pompey was one of them, and he got off to a very good start last year. And then, yeah, he broke the hamate bone in his hand, and I mean, again, it was a nice story that, you know, he went from being a season-ending injury to him getting back earlier than they expected. And, you know, again, I just assumed they would have sent him back to Vancouver to help them with the playoff push, but he went to Bluefield and then up to Lansing. So, yeah, it's good. I mean, he's had a bit of an up-and-down season this year. He's had some distinct hot streaks and then some really, really bad slumps. But when he's hot, he flashes some, not home run potential, but, you know, you look at his stat line, and he's always hitting doubles, and he's always hitting triples. The guy can flat out fly. I saw him in one game last year hit a triple, and then another one in the gap that should have been a triple, but whoever was on base in front of him didn't allow that. So he can play. I can't remember. I was looking at his stolen base percentage this morning. It's excellent as well, as I was trying to figure out Fangraph's WSB stat. Lansing's got a very, very interesting mix right now. They just can't seem to win games with them.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know from seeing Pompey and talking to other people, they say that he has some pretty incredible times getting out of the batter's box and down to first base. But in addition to that, he, you know, in a stadium like, the one that they've got there, Cooley Law School Stadium in Lansing, it's got a huge center field from the gaps towards the middle and center field, and I think he's hitting quite a few triples because there's a lot of room out there for the ball to get lost in.
Yeah, and I mean, you've seen him as well, so you'd be able to say more about this, but when he was in Vancouver, and the Nat, I won't compare the stadiums since I haven't seen both, but the Nat's got a huge outfield as well, and he, you know, he seems like a plus defender as well, but, you know, he isn't just relying on his speed to make up, you know, mistake routes, like you could say about DJ Davis last year. He seems to have a good feel for the position, and with his plus speed, can cover a lot of ground.
Well, let's talk about some of the pitchers who are actually in Lansing right now that you would have seen in Vancouver last year. First of all, the two guys who were really the dominant forces behind that Northwest League championship team, Javier Avendano and Taylor Cole, they've both struggled a fair bit in Lansing this year, despite their outstanding campaigns last year.
Yeah, and I hated it when I wrote it, but I wrote at the time that I think as these guys move up levels, they are going to struggle a bit more. I would say more for Taylor Cole than Avendano, but they are very much control pitchers. Taylor Cole is an interesting case. He was apparently hitting, and this is, again, hearsay that you read on the internet, but as a high school pitcher, he was hitting, you know, low to maybe mid-90s every now and then with his fastball. Took a couple of years off. He's a Mormon, I believe, and he took a couple of years off to do a mission, ironically, in Toronto. So he was away from the game for 2 years and then came back, and, I mean, the Blue Jays, as they're wont to do, took a flyer on him, you know, in hopes that he could get his velocity back. Last year in Vancouver, I never 100% trust stadium radar guns, but, you know, he was upper 80s at best, but his command is excellent. He can work both sides of the plate, and he has an excellent feel for pitching. But, you know, against that level, it worked. As he moves up the levels and hitters become more aware of what he's going to do and work to get pitches in their spot, I think he'll begin to struggle. And I guess that's bearing a bit of fruit in Lansing this year. You know, he's had some really, really good games, and then he's had some games where he's been knocked around a lot. So I'm not, you know, certain the exact problems, but it isn't hard to sort of get a feel for what's going wrong. And it's the same with Avendano. I think, you know, Avendano throws lower 90s, but he relies on pinpoint control as well. And, you know, if he gets into some bad spots, then the hitters are going to take advantage of that.
I can definitely attest to that personally, because I did see both of them start in Lansing. And with Avendano, he had a very good start. And I spoke to the umpires after the game, and they said that he was really hitting his spots. He was living right on the corner and hitting it every time. And I think that really made that game for him. Whereas Taylor Cole, just as you say, he's getting into the low, not the low 90, he's getting into the high 80s. He's not hitting 90 on the radar gun. And it doesn't look like he's fooling a lot of the Midwest League hitters this year.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, the lower minor leagues, I guess you want to see pitchers that can get away with hitting the middle of the plate, but their stuff gets them out of jams. Whereas these guys, their stuff isn't going to blow people away. So if they can't hit the black of the plate, then they're not going to fool any hitters. And I mean, we're only talking about the Midwest League. It's a great standard of baseball, I'm sure, but you know, we're still three levels away. So if they're going to struggle here, you know, who can say? They might end up in Dunedin, they might get to New Hampshire, but I think we can cross them off the prospect list.
Well, two pitchers who are definitely on the prospect lists were in Vancouver for some part of the year last year. One of them we'll talk about first. I want to talk about Daniel Norris, who seemed to struggle quite a bit and struggled at the beginning of this year, but has really started to come around before what someone has mentioned was they think is a hip injury has landed him on the disabled list.
Yeah, Daniel Norris is a funny case. Well, I started my Your Van Sees blog, and he was my first ever post prior to the season, basically wishing for him to end up in Vancouver. It didn't happen at the beginning of the season. It happened at the end of the season, and of course, I never got to see him pitch. I listened to one of the games he pitched on the radio, and Rob Fye, the play-by-play man here in Vancouver, essentially said he couldn't get his breaking ball over on the day, and Northwest League hitters, if you throw them enough fastballs and they know it's coming, they're going to hit it. From what I can gather, and I've tried to do a couple of different articles on him this year, because as you say, he got off to a terrible start with Lansing, and I was going back and forth with some people that have seen him there, and from what I can gather is the pitching coaches had him working exclusively off his fastball to start the season, both on his mechanics and keeping it down. And it's the same thing. If hitters know it's coming, they're probably going to hit it. But over the last four or five starts or so, I guess two things have happened. A, he's been able to keep his fastball down and control it a lot better than he was earlier in the season. And B, they've allowed him to reintroduce his off-speed offerings, one of which is his changeup, which projects, if you read enough scouts, as a plus pitch. So, you know, if he's been able to add those back in the mix and he's controlling his fastball, good things will happen. Now, as you say, he went out of his last start. I'm just going by some of the tweets I've read, one of which was hit from him, actually, where he just said it was for precautionary reasons. So hopefully it's nothing major and it's a short stint on the DL.
Well, we also hope that's true for him, and I'd love to see him pitch. He's one of the guys that I missed seeing when I was in Lansing. The other guy I missed seeing, but because he was on the disabled list at the time, is Roberto Osuna, the 18-year-old sensation from Mexico that set the world on fire last year with his Northwest League debut, striking out, I believe, 13 batters in 5 innings.
Yeah, that was a way to, you caught me here, it was either Eugene or Everett. And if you listen to the broadcasters, they reckon they were the best hitting team in the Northwest League last year. Now he had a performance against the same team in the playoffs where he struck out another 12 in 5 or something like that. I saw him twice, one of which he had a 2-week, furlough in Mexico last year. The rumors, and I actually cornered him one day in the stadium and asked him, and his mom was sick. So he flew back to Mexico for 2 weeks. So his first start after that, which I saw, he only had 2 innings or something like that. So it was tough to tell. The next one I saw, he went his usual 5, and it's hard not to get excited about this kid. You know, you hear the negatives that he's already got a man's body at he was 17 last year, and that we could have a kid that struggles with his weight throughout his career, a la Bartolo Colon. I didn't see that. For me, and when I saw him in person, when I saw him on the mound, he's a big kid, but a lot of the size for me was in his lower half and in his trunk and his legs. He's got really, really strong legs. I thought he had a very smooth, easy delivery. As I've said numerous times in my writing, I'm no scout. And obviously there's problems this year as he's been on the disabled list with an elbow injury, and we'll probably need Tommy John at some point. But, you know, he hits 95 on the gun. Not only that, but he's able to sort of move his fastball around. He changes speeds not only with his fastball, but he's got his changeup is devastating. The separation in miles per hour is 10, 12. And the movement on it was, I was only able to get behind plate for a couple of innings, but the tail on his changeup is sensational. And I mean, hitters in the Northwest League and by the looks of his stats in the Midwest League can't touch him at the moment. So yeah, I wrote a couple of articles that the Blue Jays should maybe be a bit more aggressive with this kid, seeing that he has got a man's body, but you know, because they've always said that they like to keep their teenage pitchers in Lansing until they turn 20 at least. But, you know, he's 2 years away from 20, so there's no point in holding him back. But, you know, on the other hand, he's had elbow issues already, so maybe they are right to hold him back. I don't know.
Well, I'm not part of the Blue Jays organization, so I can't speak to what their intentions are. One of the ways I approach someone like him is that he has already pitched against much better competition than he's seeing now when he pitched in the Mexican Professional League. And I think his maturity, particularly maturity on the mound, is something that I think the Blue Jays can look to. I may see him spending this year in Lansing and, you know, knock on wood, that it's going to be injury free for the rest of the year, and then move him to Dunedin despite him being 19, mainly because, again, as you say, he's got a man's body. He's probably fully developed, and he is a more advanced pitcher in terms of his pitchability and his ability to move the ball around and change speeds than most of the prospects are at his age.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny word, pitchability. You hear it a lot, and it's hard to actually quantify, but it goes back to what I was saying about his ability to change speeds, not only with his off-speed offerings, but with his fastball. He seems to have a feel for the game whenever he's in it, and, you know, it's not necessarily what pitches are working for him on the day, it's what pitches the hitters aren't seeing and picking up on, and he just has an ability to mess with hitters' heads. And, you know, as you say, it's his maturity. Yeah, the Mexican League, it's tough to equate that, but most stuff I've read say it's at least AA, if not AAA. So he's pitched against men and he's been successful. So I see no reason why, you know, knock on wood, he stays injury free, that he can't make the progression to Dunedin. You know, I said this year, but I think they're probably right to maybe leave him in Lansing for a full season before starting to move him along, and he could be right behind Aaron Sanchez as far as the organization is concerned.
Great. And let's talk about prospects, or even just, you know, regular minor league players as they start to filter into Vancouver for the start of this season. They've already released, I guess, the initial roster for the team. We've talked about this, and we've said that we think there are going to be some additions, especially as some of this year's draft picks start to sign. But let's talk about some of the names on the roster this year that could be intriguing in Vancouver. The first one that I see that could be quite a good pitcher is right-hander Jeremy Gabrazewski, who has been assigned this year. I believe he's had some very good numbers in the past couple of years in Bluefield and in the Gulf Coast League. Last season he made 9 starts in Bluefield with a 2.35 ERA, striking out 22 in 46 innings. So have you done any research into Gabrazewski? Do you know what he's going to be bringing to Vancouver this year?
Yeah, I had a quick look, and he's one of the guys that I was hoping would come up. And, you know, he's a second rounder, so looking through the roster, he is far and away the highest pick that the Seas are starting out with. He's a big kid, still pretty young. He's just turned 20. You know, 6'4", 195, I have him listed as here. Another word besides pitchability that you always hear on prospects is projectability. So, you know, I'm not exactly certain, and I didn't get a chance to grab him yesterday and have a chat with him to see, you know, exactly what he throws and what he was hitting, you know, where he was hitting the gun and extended. But, you know, I'm guessing that they see some projectability in him. They see his fastball, you know, maybe hitting the low to mid 90s. He's definitely someone that I'm going to keep an eye on. I have him here. They gave me the starting rotation yesterday. I have him making the third start of the season. So that would unfortunately mean that we're going to miss him for the home opener. He'll be making the third start down in Tri-Cities.
And who do they have listed as the first two starters for this year so far?
So we've got Eric Brown, mm-hmm. who we won't waste too much time on him, but he was the opening day starter last year as well, and he's a nice story. He was a 50th round pick in 2011. He's from Ontario, but he pitched for UBC here. So in a sense, I guess a local boy, but he'll be the opening night starter. Kyle Anderson is going on Saturday, and then Gabrazewski's going Sunday.
Okay, great. And of course, there are probably going to be several college pitchers that the Blue Jays selected in the draft this year who may very well make it to Vancouver before the end of the year is up. One guy that I see is probably going to be Matt Boyd. He was a college senior who was drafted in the 6th round. He's a lefty, about 6'3", and everything that I see about him says that he's tailor-made for a first stop in pro ball somewhere like Vancouver. I mean, you never can tell, but it seems to me that he's got that maturity of 4 years of college pitching under his belt already.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you get these college kids, and I mean, as far as age goes, the Northwest League is generally termed as a college league. So, you know, it would be an ideal starting spot for him. But they still have a lot to learn. I mean, college ball is completely different than pro ball, first and foremost, because they're moving to wood bats. You know, they have to live away from what I can gather. In college, it's just away, away, away. And then breaking balls in. Whereas, you know, as soon as they get to pro ball, it almost flips, where they need to start learning how to pound guys in. And, you know, these hitters aren't going to be able to muscle hits with their aluminum bats. Hopefully they're breaking bats. So it's still a bit of a process for these kids. They're just, you know, they're just 4 years behind the curve, and you think about, oh, they're too old for this level, but they've just come out of college. And one example, if we'll go back quickly, I mean, I saw Ben White pitch a lot last year in Vancouver. I wrote about it a lot, saying how unlucky I was that every time I showed up at the yard, Ben White was pitching, because his stuff was inordinately boring. You know, he threw in mid to upper 80s. He had a decent curveball, but, you know, he'd have a good start and a bad start, and he wasn't fooling anybody. And for me, you know, I just didn't want to see him pitch anymore. I thought he had no future. And then, lo and behold, his last five starts in Lansing have been excellent. So, you know, I don't know if that means he's learned something and the switch is flicked, or, you know, he's just had a run of five lucky starts. So yeah, so we'll see some of these college pitchers, and it'll be fun to see sort of where they are now and how quickly they develop and the learning curve goes.
So another guy that you mentioned that was interesting was Nico Taylor, and I've spoken to some scouts, and they're pretty high on Nico Taylor. I believe one of the writers that I met from Baseball Prospectus was very high on Nico Taylor. He's a fairly young guy. He's going to be 22, he's not that young anymore. He's 23 already, but he's 6'4", 215 pounds, and I think some people are expecting him to kind of break out a little bit.
Yeah, again, another guy out of college, so, you know, he's starting his pro career a bit later than other guys, so even though you say he's at 23 now, it's only his third year of pro ball. And yeah, he's a big kid, you know, 6'4", 215, we have him listed as, he's probably even bigger than that now. Had an excellent first season in the GCL, putting up an OPS of 926, a little bit less last year in the Appalachian League. And yeah, I mean, this is a kid that I was really hoping would be up. You know, just to see exactly where he is in his development, what sort of power numbers he can put up with the huge alleys and the Nats, you know, what sort of extra base power, what sort of, how he runs. I have to admit, I was a bit disappointed because I was hoping his outfield running mates would be DJ Davis and Dwight Smith Jr. and possibly Anthony Alford. That may still come to fruition, but it's not happening right now. So of the three outfielders that the Seas have listed currently, and obviously three won't be enough, I'm sure there's more to come, he is the one I'm going to keep an eye on at, you know, to start the season.
Yeah, and what do you know? There are three Canadians on the staff. We've mentioned Eric Brown already, but there's also going to be Justin Atkinson, who's a second baseman, and Sean Valeriot, who's listed as a first baseman for the Canadians this year. All three are Canadians. Valeriot's from Guelph, and Justin Atkinson's from Surrey, BC.
Yeah, I had an opportunity actually to have a little chat with Sean Valeriotti, and he was absolutely thrilled to be in Vancouver, as you will be. I don't know how much we can get into, but I was chatting to him about what the GCL is like, and it just sounds like an absolute grind in that league. They have to be at the yard at 6 a.m. for 10 a.m. games. They practice for 2 to 3 hours prior to game time, which in the Florida sun doesn't sound like a ton of fun to me. So he was happy as Larry to be in Vancouver. Whether that translates into a good season, you know, he's not sure. He was just saying he wants to do the best he can for Vancouver, and if that means he eventually ends up in Lansing. As you say, he's listed here as a first baseman. He didn't look all that big for a first baseman. Maybe I'm missing something. I took a brief look at his numbers last night. He doesn't look like he hits for a ton of power. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Justin Atkinson, that's a different story. He was drafted out of the Langley Blaze, which is quite a, not famous, but quite a well-known Premier League team out here in BC, the same team that Brett Laurie was drafted out of, and Tyler O'Neill, who was taken in the third round by the Mariners this year. So quite a successful program here. Drafted as a shortstop. I was in the media scrum with him yesterday. I'm sure I heard him say he'd been switched to first base. But looking at his last year, he played mainly second base. So I may have misheard that. As a first baseman, again, doesn't show a ton of power. As a second baseman, provided he's still got the ability to field, he has put on quite a bit of weight. He's listed here as 6'1", 205. He says he's more like 6'2", 215 at the moment. Not fat. He's just tried to put on a bit of muscle. In the hopes that his power numbers will follow. So it should be very interesting because he's the youngest guy on the team by a decent stretch, actually. He's only to turn 20 in July. So, you know, this, I don't know if we can call him a prospect, but for Vancouver Canadiens fans, I think he'll be the one to watch this year.
Yeah, I'm looking at this article from the Vancouver Sun by Elliot Papp, and he does mention that Atkinson is, quote, now being touted as their opening day first baseman, end quote, and lists him at 6'1", 210. So we'll see what happens with these three Canadians. There could be another Canadian joining the Vancouver Canadiens, as the Blue Jays selected Mike Reeves, the catcher from, I believe it was Florida Gulf Coast University, if I'm not mistaken, although I may be.
Yeah, but I got that from your article, so.
Right, and he's
that I'm wrong.
No, I was just trying to recall off the top of my head, and now that I'm looking back over it, that is correct. He's from Florida Gulf Coast University, comes from Peterborough, Ontario. And he seemed like he was a good stick without a lot of power. Again, these are our aluminum bat numbers from the collegiate ranks, hitting .330 with a .417 on base percentage, but only a .389 slugging percentage. And as I've written so far, and I haven't published it yet, but it'll probably come out on what will be yesterday's article on Blue Jays from Away, because the podcast will come out on Friday, so this article would have come out Thursday. I'm basically saying that the Blue Jays sort of have a type when drafting catchers, and that's college seniors who are good with the glove but may not have much with the bat. And these guys are generally going to be organizational guys or org guys, and it looks like Mike Reeves is in that mold as well. But as a Canadian, I'm sure he would love to get the chance to start his professional career in his home country.
Yeah, and I read a brief article after reading your article that the Gulf Coast University did on him, and from what I can gather, he mainly hit either leadoff or second for them throughout his senior season. So, yeah, not your prototypical catcher, putting up those sorts of on-base numbers. Just like JPA is not your prototypical catcher with his useless on-base percentage, but I think what you say is exactly right. I think he'll come to Vancouver. I think I wrote in my article that I would bet my firstborn's college education, fund that he'll end up in Vancouver. We'll see. Just like the two guys that split the bulk of the duty last year, Tucker Frawley and Dan Klein, both senior. Well, Dan Klein was part of the senior drafting strategy last year when they drafted nothing but college seniors from rounds 4 through 10. Good with the glove, leaders, having played 4 years of college baseball and been involved in things like the College World Series and the playoffs and stuff. But not necessarily going to hit their weight, nor are they going to move on much in the system. But, yeah, I mean, the Jays have a funny system now. After all the offseason trades, they went from a position, catching being a position of great strength, to one that's now probably regarded as quite thin. So you never know what can happen in the minor leagues.
No, exactly. And that's why we're so fascinated by them, I think. Everything always changes, and players can go from either huge prospects to busts, or they can go from being completely off the radar to surprising everybody and becoming top prospects in the span of a single season.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, like similar to what, you know, he's not a top prospect, but similar to what Kevin Pillar is doing in New Hampshire. And I mean, I wrote last year that Nick Ballygod should never be playing pro ball again. I don't think I put it in that those exact words, but that's what I was thinking, and he's having a great year in Dunedin this year. So sometimes you can't predict these things, and it's, as I said earlier about the pitchers, it's a constant learning curve, and sometimes they learn and they take that next step, and the light bulb does switch on. So you never know. But you know, these, Toronto's got 7 minor league teams to fill, 8 including if you include their Dominican team, so they need players. And they've got to draft them. They got 40 rounds to do it. You know, some of these kids are going to turn out all right, and some are going to have a couple of years of playing pro ball and something they can tell their grandkids.
Exactly. So, and with that, I'd like to wrap it up. We've been with Charlie Caskey, writer, staff writer for Jay's Journal, and the writer of Your Van Cs, YourVanCs.com. A blog dedicated to the Vancouver Canadiens, and I know Charlie's excited about the upcoming season in Vancouver.
Very excited about hopefully some of the kids that are going to come up later in the year. Not super excited about the roster as it stands right now, but you know, like last year, hopefully some guys start to move through the ranks and we see them near the end of the season.
Great. Thanks a lot for joining us, Charlie, and have a great day.
Perfect. Thank you. Same to you.
That wraps it up for episode 8 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Charlie Caskey, staff writer at Jays Journal and founder of YourVanSees.com, for joining me, and thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Jays From Away. Come on back next week and go Jays go. Your hands, higher, higher ways up your hands.